For 45 years, people have relied on Village Green Apothecary to give them individualized nutrition, pharmacy, and healthy living products. Village Green will give you the kind of person-to-person help and attention that mass market pharmacies have long ago forgotten. You can depend on us for knowledge, experience, product selection, and a smile. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com. We're here to help you.
Welcome, listeners, to the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary, located at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda. I'm Dana Lake, and I alternate the show with my co-host, Dr. Kevin Passaro, and both of us try to bring you a lot of information, a wide variety of information all about your health. The show is streamlined through MyVillageGreen.com. That's MyVillageGreen.com. And you can visit the Village Green site or the store on Cedar Lane. There's expert advice on supplements. They can answer your questions. Both places are your resource. And we're here every Sunday morning at 10 a.m., and I want to remind you to tune in next Sunday for Kevin's discussion on nutrition. Now, today we have a very interesting guest, Kelly Dorfman. She has a master's in science and nutrition, and she is a licensed nutritionist. She's a health program planner, and Kelly also has a very interesting background. She's got an extensive amount of time in clinical experience, over 29 years. Her specialty is developing nutrition and lifestyle strategies to address the complex health problems from autism to bone loss to rare genetic disorders. Physicians and other medical professionals refer cases to her for insight when traditional methods do not get the optimal results. And one of Kelly's special interests is children. Kelly has a master's in nutrition, as I said, and she's going to talk to us today about her book. It's called What's Eating Your Child? The Hidden Connections Between Food and Childhood Ailments, Anxiety, Recurrent Ear Infections, Stomach Aches, Picky Eating, Rashes, ADHD, and more, and what every parent can do about it. So welcome to the show, Kelly.
Hi, Dana. That was a great introduction.
Well, I have to tell the listeners that we've known each other for many decades and worked together, so it's always an honor and a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm glad the listeners get the experience of hearing what you have to say today.
Well, thank you.
Now, we're talking about the problems that children have, and it's a good idea to give a few statistics. Just comparing before 1980 to current, diabetes went from 7,000 in children to 125,000, asthma from 2 million to 9 million, learning disabilities from 796,000 to 3 million, ADD, ADHD from under a million to 4.4 million, and that figure is even higher now. And autism was 1 out of 2,000 before 1980. Now it's 1 out of 91. Kelly, you might have some statistics to add to that.
Well, yes. I think the other thing, I mean, I don't know if you saw the March 2011 Washington Post had that section called How to Raise a Fit Child. And one of the articles was entitled, and this is shocking, Something Pediatricians Never Used to See, Type 2 Diabetes. So literally, it's not only increasing, but it's almost like a new phenomena.
It certainly is. They used to call it, as you remember, adult onset, although I think both you and I used the term acquired, because it is acquired.
Yeah, and you know, and of course, it's a problem all through people's lives. One of the interesting things that I heard at a seminar, which kind of was disturbing but also memorable, is that they're calling dementia now type 3 diabetes. Have you heard that?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So, yes, this is a problem for sure. And we also know that, of course, allergies are going up. There have been articles on in all the major publications about that. The incidence is now like 8% has gone up just in 10 years. And it continues to be crawling up and up and up. And things like soy allergies, which you and I know 30 years ago when we first were working together, were very rare, are extremely common.
Absolutely.
Now, and I know that after they introduced genetically modified soy into the food supply in Britain, soy allergies went up 50% the next year.
That's extreme.
And peanut allergies have gone up 20% every year since the late 90s here, since we introduced genetically modified soy. And, of course, soy is botanically related. It's in the same family as peanuts.
Yes.
They're both legumes.
Well, I think what people logically ask at this point, and I'm sure our listeners are thinking about that, and I know you get the question, why? And I'd like to cover just a little bit of that. I always throw into the mix the food additives we have, 14,000 of them man-made, applied to our food, poorly tested. The 85,000 chemicals, the man-made chemicals in the environment, 200 of which have been tested, and over 17,000 are kept secret, and that testing's voluntary. The manufacturers don't have to test at all,
right.
And those chemicals are going to be there millennium from now. What else do you have to add to that mix?
Well, the favorite thing I like to blame for this problem is genetically modifying of grains. And, of course, your listeners are probably familiar with some of this because it's been in the news, but they can now take DNA that is from bacteria, and they can splice it into plants, making them sort of Frankenstein version of animal plants. And you know, I don't know if you remember this, but in fifth grade we were taught you couldn't put a donkey and a cob of corn together and get an offspring. But, but in essence, that's what's happening now is we're taking animal DNA, we're cutting it in, and what this has been found to do is raise the antigenicity of food, so it makes it more reactive. And because 80% of corn is now genetically modified and over 93% of soy is genetically modified and almost all processed foods contain one or the other, it's pretty hard to avoid it.
It is. And the labeling on this is not clear.
No. In Europe, they're required to say what is genetically modified and what isn't, but the United States has not done that. As you know, there's been a lot of debate about trying to get the labels on, and they failed. Scientists have sued the FDA for better labeling, and so the only thing you can depend on now is supposedly if it says certified organic, it should not have genetically modified organisms. However, that is changing.
Yeah, it's sad. MSG is still not required to be labeled, and you and I both know the sad history of how long hydrogenated oils were permitted and how devastating. So we got rid of hydrogenated oils 40, 50, 60 years too late, but we, you know, at least we're down on them. They're not gone. And now up comes GMO. It's like a whack-a-mole game.
Well, I'm glad you whack-a-mole, yeah. But I'm glad you brought that up because actually we got rid of trans fats, but you know they've been replaced by a fat that's just as bad. It's called an interesterified fat. It
yes.
doesn't have to be labeled, and it is not tested. It's only been tested vaguely in Malaysia, and so the food manufacturers are way, way far ahead in terms of coming up with stuff than we are in terms of testing it. And I think during the Reagan administration, we changed the way we do things in a dramatic way that sounds very subtle, but it's changed forever how things are operating, which is that it used to be you had to prove something was safe. Now you have to prove it's dangerous.
Right.
That's a huge difference. People think, oh, that's just a little bit of semantics. No. It changes everything.
Right, because sometimes we don't see the effects in humans for many generations, yet in animals you can see the effects. And we hadn't had the degree of sensitivity of testing in the past. I think as we're getting better in our testing, we'll be able to jump on things more quickly. But it's a big industry to go against.
And you're testing things alone that are operating in groups. And so
yes.
It's not so easy to test interesterified fats because you're buried among other things. And you know how it goes when something goes wrong, the one person points to the other and that person points to the first and nobody's to blame.
Exactly. There's a negative synergism that goes on between all of these additives. Sometimes you look at the names and you wonder if it wouldn't explode when you see the chemicals that are
combined.
And
we've also, you know, we have a very aggressive vaccination program, which also injects chemicals that are immune modulators into kids. And whether the vaccines are or not good is, you know, a separate debate. But in the meantime, you're injecting viruses, bacteria, laced with aluminum, formaldehyde, mercury still, to this day, and other chemicals that are also immune modulators, not to mention the viruses and the bacteria themselves. And that also affects how the immune system reacts to allergens.
Oh, absolutely. And you brought up a really hot topic. I think the term we like to use is safe vaccinations, and they cannot say they're safe. The studies are too short-term. There aren't really long-term studies on safety. And again, it may not be the vaccines. It may be the combination of additives. So that will be a topic for
another
show, because it's a detailed one and one of my favorite topics to talk about. So getting back to your book, What's Eating Your Child, and we know there's no doubt that childhood problems are increasing, that children are experiencing what used to come into the human experience in the 50s and 60s. And you and I have been in nutrition long enough to see that that's the case, the allergies, the asthma, the diabetes, the obesity especially. But we also are seeing increases in genetic changes, certainly in learning disabilities. So let's talk about wherever you want to start with this subject of what's eating your child.
Okay. Well, I think that a good place to talk is, I think you call yourself this also, but we're sort of nutrition detectives in that we think that nutrition has a lot more to do with the case than I think in regular medicine they're taught. That nutrition is, you know, sort of a minor thing. You get to it when everything else fails. It might be sort of supportive, but not that important. But the whole idea when I was writing the book was that people could use nutrition in a more powerful way to affect their health. But they would have to know how to do that. And nutrition really breaks down into two worlds. The first world is, are you eating something that's bothering you? And then the second world is, are you missing something that could help you? And you can break the whole field down into these two places. And so what I do in the book is I break down the field into cases where these are kids that I've actually seen. I've changed their names and some of the identifying details. And I walk through how you would recognize what the nutritional issues are, what they look like. Then there's a checklist to make it easy for you to see if it applies to your own child, so you can learn to be your own detective for your own child.
Now, this is a wonderful explanation, and I love the term detective, and I always feel that is what we do. What I'd like to do is cover this thoroughly in the next segment. And for those of you that have just tuned in, we're talking with Kelly Dorfman, and we're talking about her book, What's Eating Your Child. I'm Dana Lake, and I am the host for Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.
Mega Food Premium Whole Food Supplements are the only supplements crafted from scratch with farm-fresh whole foods to deliver nourishment the way nature intended. Mega Food believes Mother Nature knows best. They select only fresh whole food, harvested at the peak of ripeness, handle it gently and with care to deliver its vital essence to you in every bottle. Mega Food, from farm to tablet, our name is our promise. For more information, visit us online at megafood.com.
Zymogen is pleased to announce the arrival of Fit Food, a delicious, high-quality, functional food that's formulated to support weight management, healthy body composition, glycemic management, cardiovascular and immune health, and more. Each delicious serving of Fit Food contains 21 grams of pure New Zealand-sourced bioactive whey protein, 6 grams of fiber immune-supporting oat beta-glucan, and additional glutamine, glycine, taurine, and MCTs. Fit Food provides holistic support for today's active body. Learn more at Zymogen.com. Available now through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
All over the world, people are beginning to discover fish oil is one of the best secrets for unlocking great health. Thousands of studies have shown the amazing effects of these powerful omega-3s for heart health. Plus, fish oils have even been shown to balance moods and lessen anxiety. With exceptional taste, unrivaled freshness, and unsurpassed purity, Nordic Naturals is the easy way to get your omega-3s every day. To learn more, visit Village Green Apothecary or visit NordicNaturals.com. Nordic Naturals, committed to the planet, committed to pure and great-tasting omega oils.
The brain requires nutrition just like the rest of the body. And this is where GeroFormula's NeuroOptimizer comes to the rescue. NeuroOptimizer is a concentrated source of nutrients needed for memory, mood, concentration, and focus. NeuroOptimizer supplies the building blocks for neurotransmitters, the chemicals that allow cells in the brain to communicate and to file away memories. NeuroOptimizer is the nutritional answer to the brain's needs. To learn more about formulas, visit Gero.com. Gero Formulas, available at Village Green Apothecary.
Ah, the joy of commuting in Washington. Whether you work on the Hill or outside of the Beltway, you know how stressful it is to get around. Stress can take a serious toll on your health, and Village Green Apothecary can help. We offer over 10,000 healthy living products, including top-quality nutritional supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Our nutritionists and pharmacists are here to advise you about creating your very own individualized healthy living plan. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda, 5415 West Cedar Lane, or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to the second segment of the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda. I'm Dana Lake, and I alternate the show with my co-host, Dr. Kevin Pissarro. Please tune in every Sunday morning, and next Sunday at 10 a.m., you can hear Kevin's discussion on nutrition. Now, our guest today is Kelly Dorfman, and she has a master's in science in nutrition, and she is a health program planner and nutritionist. We've been talking about her book, What's Eating Your Child? And by the way, if you want to see about the book, go right on the site, and it's all in one line, whatseatingyourchild.com. No periods, no question marks. So it's whatseatingyourchild.com. It'd be interesting for you to go on the site. There's a lot of good information. You'll be able to tell what's in the book. So we've been talking about sort of the beginning of this. How do we go about finding out what's eating your child? And Kelly is talking about being a detective. So carry on, Kelly, with what the checklist looks like.
Okay, so let's take an example of a condition that is common to kids that you might not think has a nutrition link, and how there could be a nutrition link. And one I like to use is ear infections, because most people don't think that ear infections are very related to nutrition, because they're an infection and you go get antibiotics and that's the end of it. But it turns out there was a study done right here in good old Washington, D.C. in the late 90s that found that 90% of childhood ear infections were related to children eating a food that was bothering them. And you're familiar with Nizzulli's work, I think, Dana. He's an ENT down in Washington, D.C., and he found that there were four foods that were somewhat related to this. It was dairy, soy, wheat, and eggs in some combination. But by far, dairy was the most important.
Yes, yes.
So using that information, if you have a child that has two or three ear infections, it's a very good possibility, a 90% possibility, actually, that something that they're eating could be causing these recurring ear infections, or in some cases, ear fluid. So that's something that people wouldn't think would have a nutritional connection, but actually has a strong one.
You know, isn't it, it's odd to me that this is still news to so many people today, when it's such an easy thing to do. How, I know you've had the same thing happen, of the chronic ear infections start with the milk-based formula, and neither the pediatrician nor the parent has put that together, even though they give it to you in history.
Right, and this is something that to me is so 101 that I actually almost am embarrassed that people are coming in and I'm charging them to tell them something that to me is so basic, and yet it's still something that almost nobody knows about before you tell them. And what's even more interesting is for your listeners who are thinking, well, my child's 10 or 12 or 20, so what do I care about ear infections? Well, not taking care of ear infections leads to other kinds of attention problems. And that's what the dirty deal with ear infections are. Ear infections themselves may be outgrown by 4 or 5 in most kids, and, you know, people don't worry about them anymore. But it turns out that if you follow kids through middle school and high school, those who had a lot of ear infections as a group are still more distracted.
That's very interesting, and I'm interested that it's that connection has not been made, because we see that in the histories that we take. I would suspect that some of it is in the way the child then hears and processes what goes on. The processing is altered.
Yes, the processing is altered because there's developmental milestones for processing different things, and the auditory processing milestones happen before 3, when the ears are all full of grip. And so if they're learning to decide what to listen to and prioritize what they're listening to, and their ears are all yucked up, they can have problems. And that's exactly what happens, is when they're learning what to do with sound and how to prioritize what they're listening to and make decisions about what's important to listen to. Should I listen to my friend tapping their foot or the teacher giving out the homework? Those kind of decisions that allow you to do that are happening developmentally when you're 2.
That's early.
Yeah, because that's when you're learning, the heater went on. I wonder if that's important. No, that's not important. I'm not going to listen to that. But if your ears are all full of grip during these times when you're developing this system, learning what to listen to, you don't make the right decisions, and you don't know what to listen to, so you listen to either everything or nothing, and then the next thing you know, you're being diagnosed with ADD because you're not listening to the teacher in your own little head, and the auditory processing is off.
Additionally, on the auditory processing, it certainly leads to speech delays.
Yes, and that's been also found in studies that high amounts of ear infections are connected with speech delays. But the difference with that is that many of those can be overcome with therapy, so people think, well, now it's all behind us. But what continues to remain, and unfortunately they have not done studies that I've been able to find past age, 18 or so at the end of high school, but the distractibility stays. The speech can get corrected, and the child may, not have the ear infections, but the distractibility hangs on and on.
Through adulthood.
Yeah, well, and they stopped testing it, but I would suspect it keeps going.
Sure. And I think we also know that adults learn to live with it, adapt to it more easily than young children do, so it may not be as apparent.
But there also is a big trend to diagnose adults with ADD now.
Yes.
And so and ADD is just any diagnosis or disorder that it doesn't tell you what you have. If somebody has an ADD diagnosis, that's like saying you have a fever.
Well, yes.
It's the disease. exactly. And so the disease very often is, you have an auditory processing problem, you have a visual processing problem, you have a sensory issue, you have short-term memory. You have to break down what are the things that are making you distracted.
Exactly. Well, I'm glad you introduced the subject of being a detective, and I think that's what makes our job most interesting. I know you feel the same way. I don't do easy.
Oh, no. And the thing is, but ear infections, what's kind of ironic, is they are kind of easy.
Well, it's easy to us, but it's not to the people who have struggled for years not knowing what to do. Let's talk a little bit about the picky eater, because that is a common complaint.
Yes, it is. And that I wish I had better statistics for that, but you don't have to look very far to see that if you call one of the eating programs locally to find out about getting your child in for an eating disorder, you'll find there's a long waiting list.
Yes.
Because picky eating has become near epidemic proportions, and it's not, again, only in children. They're starting to form support groups for adults now, too.
Well, that is news to me.
Yeah, there was actually some group online said you could sign up to be part of a group, and they were completely overwhelmed with thousands of people.
Very interesting. So it just carries on into adulthood.
Yes, I think this idea that you necessarily outgrow it because you mature, although there are some things you can overcome with an adult mind and force yourself to do, picky eating does not necessarily go away just because somebody grows up.
Well, and again, adults can mask it. And they can.
Yes and no. I mean, they can certainly make excuses, or other people will understand. But I've heard stories from many adults about having trouble going out to eat with friends.
Yes.
This was not heard in our generation again. This is sort of a new thing.
Exactly. So, what can people do? How do you identify what could underlie picky eating?
Well, There's a number of things to do. I think that, first of all, you want to look for symptoms that suggest the child is having trouble eating. And like everything else, your body talks to you, and the child is telling you through their symptoms. And so, if, for example, I just got a call this morning about a child who took an hour to eat every meal.
Wow.
Now, you could easily say, oh, that's just behavior, you know, make them speed up. But my first question is, why would it take so long for someone to chew up their food? And that's a sign that possibly this child is having trouble literally chewing and swallowing their food. So what I would want them to do is check with somebody who has an oral motor specialty to see if the child knows how to use his tongue properly to push the food around and to move it around properly and then swallow it.
Yes. Tone issues.
Yeah, and it's not only just tone issues, it's motor planning issues. And, for example, when you eat a piece of an apple, you have to use your tongue like a rotor on a blender to move it around so that it can be chopped up by your teeth. And some kids let their tongue sit on the bottom of their mouth so they, you know, they're not using their tongue properly, so the food sits there too long, and then it becomes a choke hazard. They get scared, and then they don't want to eat stuff.
And these are the children where parents say when we introduce solids, all of a sudden they lost interest in eating, but they were fine on baby food, and that's because their development is not where their age is.
Right, or else they spit it out too much, or they're drooling too much. I mean, these are all symptoms that they don't know how to use their mouth properly. And like anything else in development, some people develop normally without help, and other people don't. So some children need extra help to have somebody come in and help them figure out how to use their teeth, how to use their tongue properly to get the food moved around and swallowed.
Good advice. Good advice.
And that's the beginning. So, but if that's not the issue, if the child can chew up what they want to, but they only want to eat, and it's usually the same foods. I don't know about you, but I don't think I've ever seen somebody that was stuck on peas or stuck on spinach. it's always the same old crackers and milk products. And so if they are really stuck and they don't want to try vegetables, which is the normal complaint, or with the food that you're eating, they only want to eat brand X, and I don't want to mention their local fast food places, but, you know, we all know, I actually, if you work with enough picky eaters, you know what brand of chicken nugget they
yes.
all prefer. They all prefer the same one, by the way.
Yes, they do.
Yes, and so there's of course, there's reasons for this, and in order to introduce new foods that they're going to want to try, they have to be acclimated to them. And if you expect, one mother asked me to help her kid not like junk food. And I said, I don't know about you, but I can't do that because they're chemically designed to make you addicted to them. And so it's not a matter of making the child not like them, but exposing them to other foods so that they can develop other kinds of tastes and preferences.
Well, you've said it very well. Give us a few hints that for the parents that are listening. We just have about a minute. A few hints on what they can do with the picky eater.
Okay. Well, the first thing is that you have to understand that eating is an acclimated activity. So you can't expect a child to like a food the first time. And this is where a lot of American parents kind of go astray. The first time little Peter says no, they say, oh, he doesn't like peas. And that's not true. It takes a long time to acclimate to new foods. So don't expect them to love the food the first time. Expect them to, you know, maybe gag even and not get all excited about it. That's normal behavior. And that's not a signal that you need to give up.
And that, I'm glad you emphasized that, and we're going to continue this discussion. For those of you who have just tuned in, this is the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. I am Dana Lake, your host. Please stay with us. We'll be right back after the break with more good information from Kelly Dorfman.
Whether you're an active baby boomer, a weekend warrior, or a professional athlete, Boron's Arnicare Gel is the perfect solution to all life's little injuries. Arnicare, which contains the healing benefits of homeopathic Arnica Montana, can be used safely to treat muscle pain, stiffness, swelling, and bruising due to minor injuries, overexertion, and surgery. The non-greasy gel has no artificial colors, perfumes, or parabens. Arnicare is also available in cream and ointment formulas. You can find Arnicare at Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Visit Arnicare on the web at arnicare.com.
New from Garden of Life, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins. They are the only raw multivitamin to include live enzymes and probiotics, amino acids, and antioxidants. They are gluten and dairy free with no soy allergens. Vitamin Code is uncooked, untreated, unadulterated, and binder free. Vitamin Code multivitamins from Garden of Life. Go beyond vitamins and minerals. Get the code, Vitamin Code. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Get the one tiny pearl that delivers big acid offalus, 900% more. Get acid offalus pearls from Enzymatic Therapy. Each little pearl-shaped capsule makes a big impact, delivering up to 900% more live probiotics to the intestine than other products. This revolutionary product aids digestion, supports a healthy immune system, and is perfect for travelers who want to enhance intestinal health. This season, make sure to take the pearls that give you big acid offalus. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Staying mentally sharp means nourishing the mind as well as the body. That's why there's new Cognisure from Metagenics. Research shows that the active natural ingredient in Cognisure supports multiple mechanisms necessary for maintaining healthy cognition and a healthy brain as it ages. Cognisure is also easy to take in delicious, chewable chocolate tablets. Have a clear and bright future by maintaining mental capacity with healthy habits and Cognisure. Remember Cognisure for healthy brain aging support. Available through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
Have you ever wondered why the cold and flu season occurs in the fall and winter months? One theory is because of a decrease in sun exposure, our bodies don't make enough vitamin D, which is essential to proper immune function. That's why medical experts recommend supplementing with vitamin D. Thorne Research's vitamin D products are made from pure vitamin D, with no preservatives or unnecessary ingredients added. Support your immune system with Thorne's vitamin D1000 and D5000. These and other immune-supporting formulas are always available at Village Green.
Welcome back, listeners, to the third segment of the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary, located at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda, Maryland. I'm Dana Lake, and I alternate the show with Dr. Kevin Passaro. We are here every Sunday morning at 10 AM. Please tune in next Sunday for Kevin's discussion on nutrition. Today, we've been talking with Kelly Dorfman, who is a health program planner and nutritionist. She's also a friend and colleague, and she's the author of a new book, What's Eating Your Child? And this book is terrific. You can go on the website, whatseatingyourchild.com. No periods, no commas, no question marks, just whatseatingyourchild.com, and you'll find it. The book is covering the hidden connections between food and childhood ailments, anxiety, recurrent ear infections, stomach aches, picky eating, rashes, ADHD, and more. And we're now talking about the picky eating. We did talk about the ear infections early on. So, Kelly, let's talk more about the picky eating and then your program. I love the name EAT, the EAT program.
EAT program, yes. So you know exactly what we're going after. Well, the EAT program is based on a couple of simple principles. One is that it's easier to take away things than to add things in the beginning. And I would rather see a child eat a peanut butter sandwich three times a day than eat a bowl of crackers for one meal, you know, a bowl of pasta, and then maybe one peanut butter sandwich. So I'm trying to at least get rid of the worst of the junk food. So you can eliminate things that are really bad, because a child that has a weak diet doesn't have a lot of room in it for really bad foods. And the other thing is, if there's, of course, an allergen or a sensitivity, that can interfere with appetite and desire to eat foods, and so eliminate that can also be helpful. So that's what the E part of EAT is. And then A is add and T is try. And we were talking before the break about the fact that eating is an acclimated activity, and so you have to have many hits before you like something. And we have this idea in this country that if a child doesn't like broccoli the first time, that's the end of it, and it really isn't. They're allowed not to like it for a while, and you can reintroduce it and reintroduce it, and over time, people acclimate, and they eat what they're used to.
You know, I am so glad that you brought this up, because it is classical for parents to say, uh-oh, doesn't like it, and that food just stays off. And when we do histories, when we take the histories, I will hear that a child didn't like broccoli at 2, and now the child's 4, and they haven't tried it again.
No, and you don't have to like things the first time. It took me 3 years to like Indian food. I mean, I had this idea in my head, I don't like it. And I joined a group that met once a month, and that's all they wanted to serve for whatever reason. And I just thought, you know, I can keep trying this and see if there's something I like. And, you know, the first year, I didn't find much, but by the second year, I actually found some dishes I liked. And occasionally now, I actually go out and order Indian food. It's just that wasn't part of my palate. It wasn't part of growing up. I mean, most people I met who have not grown up in the South don't eat turnips because they're just not exposed to them. You have to learn to eat them. And so I think that part of your job as a parent is to help your child. And if you're depending on the food companies to help you, they're going to seduce them with foods that are heavily flavored and chemicaled, as you were talking about before, and they're going to win.
Every time.
Yeah, and I can't tell you how many parents have told me that they can make a chicken nugget, their child will not touch it.
Yes, and it is true that our palate has been challenged with screaming in artificial flavors and sugars. And so children don't have that ability, and adults, to taste the real natural taste in simple, organic, natural foods.
Right, and when you look at a chicken nugget from one of the famous fast food places that has over 30 ingredients in it, over half that chicken nugget is cornstarch. They can form them so they're all uniform. Kids like that. If you ever try to make a chicken nugget, one's lumpier than the next one. They're kind of chewy. But those all melt in your mouth because of all the cornstarch. And they're all uniform. And so the kids prefer them.
You know, that brings to mind that uniformity occurs no matter if you're getting the same size in slices of turkey. So maybe one of the lists of do's is do not eat uniform food. Each piece should look different.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're actually making it and you're not putting it together as a processed sort of starch-based food, which is what it takes in order to glue things together so every piece of turkey or chicken looks the same. For years I wondered how they did it. I don't know about you. I thought, how do they get them all so neat? And when you open them up, you don't actually see chicken. It looks all kind of uniform.
Yes.
And those are easy to chew, so the kids like them. So, and you have to get them acclimated to different kinds of things, and you have to tolerate the distress of them saying, I don't like it, for a couple times, and that's normal.
Yes, that is normal, and it's okay, and we move on with it. So you talked about the EAT program with E, eliminate any irritants that may be causing bad reactions.
You add a new food one at a time, and if a child is very, very picky, I suggest picking one food and introducing the same food over and over for 2 weeks rather than have a lot of crazy different changes, like today it's carrots, tomorrow it's peas, next day it's broccoli. It's the same food over and over and over.
You know, that's a good idea, and I'm not sure that's widely utilized.
No, and I think that because what happens is it allows you to build traction with the food. Because the first time you gag a little bit, you're not sure you like it. The second time, it's still strange. The third time, oh, I know what that is. And the fourth time, the fifth time, you just get used to it. And people eat consistently, and studies have found this across the board, what they're used to.
Well, these are so many good ideas. Let's talk a little bit about behaviors and how they're related to the diet. The bipolar child, because this is in the news a lot, and bipolar diagnosis in children seems to be increasing, and you have a chapter called The Bipolar Child Who Wasn't.
Yes, and I think that's probably my favorite chapter because it's the most dramatic and really shows a great, it's almost like with the money shot with nutrition, because it can show you in great depth and sort of excitement what can happen or when nutrition goes off. And this was a child who I started seeing when she was 9. She's now 17. And she was brought to me. She was ready to get kicked out of school. She was going to be put in an emotionally disturbed sort of kind of school situation. She was so disengaged that the psychologist writing report, you know, almost described her as having autistic-like social traits, where she was mind-blind to other people's concerns and needs or even their presence. She had terrible behavior problems. She was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and she had been on a string of medications that would have put a 40-year-old to shame, and she still wasn't doing any better. And it turned out that it was gluten sensitivity, the whole thing. And I'm sure
fascinating, and we see it, yes.
Yeah, because I know you have, because I see kids like this a month, And so I know you have to be seeing these people. They're diagnosed with oppositional defiant disorder, anger management problems, all kinds of labels, sometimes schizophrenia and even in worse type situations, mood disorders. And you take them off of gluten and all of a sudden they're a completely different person.
And it's interesting to me that that is not looked at. Now, when we talk about gluten, you address this, and as you know, I do too. There isn't one way to react to gluten. So go over quickly what gluten reactions include, because there are numerous.
There are numerous gluten reactions, and most people are familiar with the most common reaction, which is stomach problems. So stomach pain, gas, bloat, diarrhea, constipation, those are more traditionally associated with gluten intolerance and the true gluten disease, which is celiac disease, of course, which is an autoimmune disease where you don't tolerate gluten. But there are also neurological symptoms. There's joint symptoms. There's headaches. There is skin problems that can also be related to gluten problems, and those are harder for people to see.
They certainly are. And some people will go to the doctor and they get an allergy test for IgE, histamine releasing, and they may or may not be allergic, but that is not the allergies are not what usually cause these problems. Correct, Kelly?
Right. I would say generally they're not allergic to gluten. And actually, most people I see, including Jessica, who is talked about in this book, she was tested for celiac disease because, to their credit, the doctor thought, well, this is so bad, maybe it's celiac disease, which has all kinds of neurological conditions, including certain dementias that are associated with it. So they did screen her for celiac disease, and she was completely clean. So they moved on.
Without seeing how gluten can affect you in other ways.
Well, because gluten sensitivity, as you know, there are all kinds of tests out there for gluten sensitivities, but they're not that great.
Right.
The really only test is trial and terror.
Trial and terror?
That's what I call it.
I call it trial and response.
Oh dear. Maybe I should change.
No, because it is tough. And if you go off of food, what you're saying, and for those that are not sure what we're talking about, when you remove a food, and you go through withdrawal or severe symptoms, bingo, that food is having a major effect on your behavior.
Right, and and it's interesting because Jessica ate a lot of gluten, but her mother insisted that she had a very good diet, but it turned out that she would eat a bite of something, but she mostly was living on pasta and bread. So we took her, and we thought that she'd give us a hard time about this because this is a child that nobody could talk to. They couldn't cope with her at school. She was completely out of control, and she went right along with it, which was interesting. She was concerned about it. She complained, but she knew inside that child that had all these diagnoses and all these drugs was somebody who knew there was a problem and wanted to help herself. So she agreed to do a month trial.
That's amazing in and of itself.
Well, but it's amazing, except that it happened so much.
It always impresses me when the child seems more willing than the parent.
Yes, and that can happen too. But and of course, in this case, the parent was willing too. But they always were waiting for the child to go along. And sometimes these kids are so out of it that they can't really make a decision. But underneath all of these crazy behaviors in a child who was described that couldn't understand what was going on around her, she said she'd do it for a month. And although she obsessed about eating gluten that entire month, it was so clear there was a difference. By the end, we decided to let her have a bagel just because she couldn't stop talking about it. And the reaction was so dramatic after she'd been off of it, she became completely psychotic, and the bipolar was completely out of control for 3 days. And then she said, I'll never do that again. And you know, she hasn't.
Well, that cheat's important.
Yes.
When people say, oh, you know, we went off the diet, great. What'd you learn?
Yes. I think that's so important. They feel so bad about themselves and guilty, and I'm right with you.
Well, this is so interesting, and we're about to approach the last segment. And, folks, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to The Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM. I'm Dana Lake, and we're talking with Kelly Dorfman about her book, What's Eating Your Child. And it's a lot of good information, and we'll have even more in the next segment. Stay with us. We'll be right back after the break with more from Kelly Dorfman.
Mega Food Premium Whole Food Supplements are the only supplements crafted from scratch with farm-fresh whole foods to deliver nourishment the way nature intended.
Megafood believes Mother Nature knows best. They select only fresh whole food, harvested at the peak of ripeness, handle it gently and with care to deliver its vital essence to you in every bottle. Megafood, from farm to tablet, our name is our promise. For more information, visit us online at megafood.com.
Bridging the gap between nutraceuticals and pharmaceuticals. That's the concept behind Zymogen's new exclusive and patented line of formulations, which utilize sophisticated delivery technologies to focus on specific molecular targets. The Zymogen EP line features Immunitix 3-6, a potent ingredient that has demonstrated a measurable ability to prime and enhance immune cell function. Applications include immune system support and support for white blood cell recovery following radiation therapy and other bone marrow affecting treatments. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
For over 10 years, Nordic Naturals has been the world leader in crafting omega-3 fish oils that are great for the body and for the planet. They work one-on-one with researchers and select fishermen to harvest only those fish species that are flourishing. With Nordic Naturals, you get all the benefits of omega-3, a strong heart, clear eyes, and flexible joints, plus the reassurance that their products are environmentally friendly. To learn more, visit Village Green Apothecary or visit NordicNaturals.com. Nordic Naturals, committed to the planet, committed to pure and great-tasting omega oils.
Did you get enough lutein today to support eye health? Most Americans consume only 2 milligrams per day, yet populations with good eye health often consume 6 to 20 milligrams to protect the macula of the eye against oxidative stress and aging. Vision Optimizer from Gero Formulas supplies lutein, zeaxanthin, and 13 other vitamins, phytonutrients, and herbs that support eye health and function, reduce eye fatigue, and promote eye comfort. For more information, visit Gero.com. Gero Formulas, available at Village Green Apothecary.
Do you have unique needs that a mass market pharmacy can't handle? Village Green Apothecary can help. Maybe your doctor prescribed a special compounded formula for you, or you have concerns about allergies or dietary supplements. We invite you to talk with one of our compounding specialists today. Our team of 50 includes pharmacists, nutritionists, a clinical herbalist, and a naturopath offering customized products and personalized healthy living plans to ensure your well-being. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to today's final segment of the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda. I'm Dana Lake, and I alternate the show with Dr. Kevin Pissarro, and we are here every Sunday morning at 10 AM. Please tune in next Sunday for Kevin's discussion on nutrition. Today, we've been talking with Kelly Dorfman. She's a health program planner and nutritionist, and her new book is What's Eating Your Child? The Hidden Connections Between Your Child's Diet and Common Childhood Ailments. Now, we have covered a lot. We've talked about ear infections. We've talked about her EAT program, picky eating. We can't cover all of the conditions that Kelly covers so well in her book, but one common concern that many parents have is the child with anxiety, the worrier. So, Kelly, tell us the connections there with diet and nutrition.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that one up, Dana, because we've been mostly talking about the one part of the nutrition detective work, which is, are you eating something that's bothering you? We've talked about gluten sensitivity, and we talked about ear infections and how often dairy is involved with that. But this is a case in anxiety of something that could be missing. And the original work about this was done, and I know you're very well familiar with this, when a researcher discovered that people who lived in countries where they ate a lot of fish had much lower levels of depression. And this happened many years ago, but it started a whole flurry of studies that have been done since then to look at the components of fish oil and how they could affect brain function. And at Harvard, about 10 years ago, they started a series of studies that were looking at one kind of fat in fish called EPA. There's two major fats in fish, DHA and EPA, but EPA is the one that they think is most associated with anxiety. And giving people lots of EPA worked as well as medication for anxiety, but it had very few side effects. And this research is starting to trickle down into children, but the children studies are always trickier, and there aren't as many of them because they're more expensive to do and involve more people because you have the parents plus the children to deal with. So I borrowed some of the information that we've gotten from these adult studies, and I've started using the same kind of EPA intensive fish oil supplement in children with anxiety diagnoses, which is, as we talked about in the beginning, becoming more and more and more, along with brain cancer and allergies and everything else that's going up. Certainly the diagnosis of anxiety disorder is going up. So we have found, or I have found, that a high EPA formula is very successful, and that's what the story about the Worrier is about, using high EPA fish oil to deal with anxiety.
And it is effective. The doses have to be pretty high in some individuals, and I think that when people hear about this, they may start with a very low dose, which is a smart way to go, but if they don't get results, they may give up on it.
Right, and they also tend to use regular kind of mass market fish oils that are sort of a 50-50 or a 60-40 combination of DHA to EPA, and you really have to have a very high concentrated EPA formula if you're going to take a shot at this. I have not found how to use as much proportionally as they did in the Harvard studies to get very good results. And they don't know exactly why this works, but when you think about it, your brain is 60 to 70% fat, and fish oil is a kind of fat, so it's almost like a structural component where you're rebuilding the brain with the better kind of fat.
Oh, absolutely. And we're about three or four generations into wrecking the brain development with hydrogenated oils and the trans fats that were blockers.
Yes, absolutely. And so the trouble with adding this later in life, especially in the adult studies, is you're retrofitting. And you know it's always harder to put an air conditioning system into a house that wasn't built for it than it is to put it in right the first time. So it takes a lot, as you're saying. The doses have been very high, and maybe that's why in kids I haven't had to use quite so much. But one of the ways that they think this works is that it literally changes the way the neurotransmitters send their signals.
And that's critical. And mentioning the neurotransmitters, talk a little bit about the amino acids as well.
That's a very good point. They're, you know, neurotransmitters, not all of them, but a good hunk of them are built from proteins. A good example that most people know is serotonin, which is made from the amino acid tryptophan. So you can sometimes use the building blocks of neurotransmitters in the case of serotonin, again, which is highly associated with a sense of well-being. You would use the amino acid 5-HTP.
And it's very effective. I call it a soft approach when you compare it with the meds.
Well, it is, but it also works at a different point than the meds do. The difference I always tell people is that we're adding water to the river by adding 5-HTP. So we're allowing your body to build more the neurotransmitter. The drug builds a dam.
Yes.
And so and you can't control that as well.
That's right. And that's an excellent analogy.
It does, because it changes the way you reuptake the serotonin. So it's the body, with 5-HTP, it really allows your body to make the decisions about how to control this increased flow of water, if you will, whereas the drugs don't allow you that. The serotonin goes up whether you want it or not, which is why sometimes people get some of the not beneficial effects of serotonin by taking the medications, and too much serotonin can cause something called serotonin syndrome, where people are disassociated and make bad decisions like killing themselves.
Yeah. And GABA, talk a little bit about GABA, because it's unique in that it is both an amino acid and a neurotransmitter.
Yes, and I actually do talk about GABA somewhat in the book. GABA is, of course, the primary neurotransmitter in the brain for calming. And the brain works on a balance between excitatory and calming neurotransmitters. And there's actually more calming neurotransmitters in the brain than there are excitatory. But when people are very agitated, that imbalance starts to, show some problems. And so GABA is one of the few neurotransmitters you can actually take as a neurotransmitter. You can take it as it is, and some of it seems to trickle through.
It sure does, and it can be very effective with anxiety and phobias.
Absolutely, and calming also for kids, with sleep problems and hyperactivity.
Let's talk about sleep problems, because that's certainly a common complaint that impacts on the parents as well.
Oh, yeah, that does impact everybody. It's so funny, but when you think about sleep, what they tell you to do when you go to sleep is don't think about that. You know, think only about sleep. And, of course, that's the hardest thing to do, is to tell yourself, don't think about something when you're trying to fall asleep. And so, of course, kids aren't any better at that than adults are. And some of them need help to modulate that. And one thing I found is very useful nutritionally is a supplement called melatonin, which is, of course, a hormone that is made in your pineal gland. And your melatonin goes up in response to darkness. And when you add a little bit more, it turns that signal up so you can override the, all those, you know, oh, I have my math test, oh, I have this, I have that, that you're trying, quote, not to think about.
Yeah, melatonin has been very successful, and especially in children who have the severe sleep disorders. And I know that some parents are reluctant to use it. Talk a little bit about the safety of melatonin.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Dana. I think that parents need to know that there's been a lot of studies about melatonin in children, which is starting at age 3, they've used up to 8 milligrams, which is a lot of melatonin. And the only big side effect appears to be in some kids, there are nightmares. And so you can start with a small dose and build up. If you take too much, you can wake up on the groggy side. But melatonin also seems to operate like an antioxidant, and there are some studies in adults now where they're looking at it as a way to prevent cancer.
Yes, and they and it is referred to as anti-aging as well.
Yes, and so I think that melatonin is, it's interesting, the government says that it appears to be safe, and that's about as close as you're going to get to an endorsement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, when you read this stuff, they say, you know, use with caution, talk to your doctor, it appears to be safe. That's, I'm afraid, parents, that's as good as you're going to get.
And since we're talking about sleep, night terrors, it's interesting how many parents don't report this unless you ask for it specifically.
Yeah, what have you been using for night terrors?
Well, I use 5-HTP and magnesium as the starting point because it supports the serotonin, and I can tell you it's been remarkable. Now, I'm also using omega-3s, so it's important. I can't tell you which one is the most effective. I do think the 5-HTP is probably the key there.
Yeah, I would have voted for that one myself. I think the magnesium is very useful, but in terms of night terrors, I would think the 5-HTP works the best.
And a lot, I lump into night terrors as you do too, the sleepwalkers and sleep talkers and people that get dressed and actually go out.
Drive a car, yeah.
Yeah, they respond as well too, because the meds that are used are strong meds.
Yeah, they're horrifying. And a lot of them are adaptive or addicting too. And I think melatonin does not, since you make it yourself and all you're doing is you're enhancing the amount that you're making, a small amount, it doesn't have the kind of addiction qualities that Ativan and Xanax and all these prescription medicines do. And I've seen young kids on some of these.
Yes, yes. It's a pleasure to use something that's safe and natural.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you, Kelly. We need to have you back because there's much more in this book than we talked about. We skimmed the surface. And again, for those of you who tuned in recently, it's What's Eating Your Child, and you can Google that or type it in without any punctuation, and you will get the website for her book. So, Kelly, we hope to have you back again.
Thank you so much, Janice. Lovely as always.
Okay. And I just want to thank you, listeners, for joining us on The Essentials of Healthy Living on 1500 AM. You can access this show or any of the previous shows through myvillagegreen.com. Please remember, it's not the number of breaths you take. It's the moments that take your breath away. This is Dana Lake and Village Green wishing each and every one of you good health and a breathtaking day.
Ah, the joy of commuting in Washington. Whether you work on the Hill or outside of the Beltway, you know how stressful it is to get around. Stress can take a serious toll on your health, and Village Green Apothecary can help. We offer over 10,000 healthy living products, including top quality nutritional supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Our nutritionists and pharmacists are here to advise you about creating your very own individualized healthy living plan. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda, 5415 West Cedar Lane, or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.